Right, yes. No more silent movies. So now that this is on, the people on Omnon can hear me, the people there can hear me. So we're going to discuss the two papers. One of the things we do here and the style we're going to use is to have the presenters come up and the opponent come and sit in the front here, and the presenter presents the paper for the 15 to 20 minutes, and then we have discussion around that paper, including some questions that have been asked, and we review the quality of the questions and the quality of the individual papers. Now, rather than just give you seminal works that are perfect, I like to pick papers that have some flaws in them and let you guys try and address those and start talking about them. Now, one of the things I also want to do at this first presentation section was to discuss the paper that is... Nope, not that one. Not that one. Where did my slides go? I was talking a wee bit about it here. So in terms of the argument paper that I put up, where if you have a look here, we have a paper in Fronter, which I'll just log into. Luckily, it doesn't show your password on the stream, because that would be embarrassing. Oh, actually, some of them will replace it with just with 8 dots, regardless of how long your actual password is. So they do try and get around it. If you guys had a chance to have a look at this one, one of the things I wanted to bring up and start with was a quick discussion around this short rebuttal paper, and to talk some of the challenges it had, right, and some of the challenges they're trying to face. So this one here, the Jackie paper, so Jackie Orr paper, and as I said, this is a follow-up. Size. There is no convincing evidence that working memory training is not effective. A reply to Melby, Langford, and Hume. Okay, so this is part of academic discussion. Right? So one of the things I wanted to point out about this is that often when you publish, people will come back and they'll criticize you. And then you might publish another paper saying, well, actually, no, their critique of my paper isn't correct for all of these reasons, right? Normally, you'll see some of this discussion happens in the peer review process, right? So when you submit a paper, it goes to peers, other researchers. They look at it and say, well, you know, you're missing bits on this and you're not explaining this well. We think this is a problem. And then you get to respond and you get to update your paper. And then... they either go, oh, yeah, that's much better and accepted, or they say, well, actually, no, there's still more things you do, and they send it back to you, you do some more stuff, and it comes back in. And so you have this kind of back and forth to try and improve the paper to the point where everyone's happy that it should be published. Okay. Now, usually that process traditionally was happening in peer review. There is another way it happens where, you know, you publish something and you've done a peer review process and the people in that group are happy with it. So you publish it, then other people go, wait a minute, no, that's completely wrong, and they'll publish their rebuttal. So this is the third in a series of papers. So there's the original publication, a they've got all their numbers wrong publication, followed by a, actually, no, I still believe in our original numbers. Right? And in fact, their claim here, there is no convincing evidence working memory training is not effective. So they were claiming that it was effective, and the other people said, no, it's not effective. And they said, no, it's not that it's not effective. Which is... yes, it's a null hypothesis challenge, right? And so when you look at this paper and some of the things that I thought you guys might need to think about were some of the terminology. Right, so when you're reading one of these papers, one of the things you need to kind of make sure you've got is what is your terminology, right? So in here, They talk about fluid intelligence. Okay, so this is about working memory training. So when you're doing serious games, one of the things you have to understand is the environment you're working in. Right? So these were games to teach working memory. Now, working memory is part of your fluid intelligence. Crystalline intelligence is the stuff you've already learnt. Fluid intelligence is your ability to learn. So learning new things. They talk about control groups. Now, how many of you have read enough psychology papers to know what a control group is? Good. Okay, so we're really happy with the control group are the people who are not doing an activity. Passive versus active controls. So a passive control group, they're defining as a group who you measure both groups at the start. A passive control group does nothing, and then you measure them again at the end of a period of time, right? And you're assuming that period of time might be what's relevant, right? So if you, for example, were working with elderly, you know that they're going to get worse over time. So if you're going to test them now and test them again in 6 months, you need a control group who is just getting older so that you can see what a normal decline is. Right? And so you can compare yourself against a passive control group because you say, well, the current situation is they're a passive control group. The challenge with that is that if you do a passive control group like they did for the Sparks, which is a depression game, the passive control group was being left on the waiting list. And this was for teenage depression. And if you have people diagnosed with depression, so you're a teenager, you get diagnosed with depression, and there are two options. Either you play a game and visit researchers on a kind of fortnightly basis to see how you're doing. Or you're told, we don't have any psychologists, so you have to wait 6 months. Come back in 6 months and we'll see you then. The passive control group of being ignored for 6 months is probably not great for people with depression, right? And so, and it may be the fact that you're intervening at all that's important, right? Doesn't matter what you actually did, it's the fact that someone paying attention to you, that people care about you getting better, that people are interacting with you, that is the influence, right? So how you do it is there are various ways you do it. If you want to show that your game is the benefit, you have to have a different game that isn't your game, which they come in and play at the same rate, and you ask them the same kind of questions, and you come and get them to come and see the psychologist at the same rate. And so you have all of the same things, and just try and minimize the difference between your control group and your intervention group to try and make it as small as possible, right? And in medical things, that's why for drug treatments, they'll give you a placebo pill, right? Because the placebo effect, just the fact that people are paying attention to you, and, you know, it's weird things like bigger pills have more effect than smaller pills, and brightly colored pills have more effect than white pills. Just because people think, oh, wow, it's big and it's brightly coloured, it must be really good for me. So, yeah, there's... and so when you're doing things with when my... at university, when my girlfriend was doing her master's on bees and neurotropic effect and neurostimulators, dopamine, she was injecting bees with a neuroinhibitor, right? It's actually quite hard to get a bee on a wee pedestal and inject it with a syringe. I spent many hours taping bees onto wee pedestals so that they could be injected. But she had to inject them with saline or the neuroinhibitor, right? Because if you just, like, stab them with something, it could be the fact you're sticking a needle in the back of their spine that is causing the behavior rather than the actual drug that you're inserting, right? So you have to make your control group as similar to your normal group. The challenge is once you make your control group really, really similar, you do get rid of a lot of the positive effects, right? Because there is a lot of things that, and this is the challenge for working with the elderly, if the fact that you're getting them to come in to a lab to have a meeting once a week, you're getting them out of the house, they're being fairly active, they're having to do navigation, cognitive tasks, they're having to meet new people, they're having to talk about stuff, they're having to remember what happened last week. All of the stuff around the activity is so great that it's really hard to extract, is it your one thing that had the benefit? Right? Or is it the fact that you're engaging with them that makes the return? So it talks about placebo pills and about funnel plots. You know a funnel plot? Not heard of funnel plots? Yeah. So funnel plots are in this space, an interesting thing in science where we talk about, and I need a piece of chalk or a whiteboard marker. It appears they have no chalk here anymore, even though they still have a chalkboard. Ah, there's a piece of chalk. Okay. Behind the coffee. So if you have, and they do a vertical one, so a funnel plot says, you know, if this was the number of participants, so if that's number of participants, and this is size of effect, let's say this is zero and this is positive and that's negative, okay? As you increase the number of participants in a study, you expect the standard deviation to get smaller as you go up, right? Because your chance of error should decrease, right? So your error margins on your true mean, right? With a very large number of people, you should be getting close to the actual true mean, right? So your error should be decreasing. And so you'd expect a bunch of studies that were in here which had large error margins because they only have a few people in them and to be splayed around, right? But as you got more people you sampled, you would expect some of these to start being closer to the center line of like the actual size of an effect, and have smaller errors because there are more of them. And so they describe this as a funnel plot, right? Because it funnels towards this lots of participants, as should be at the narrow end. There is some additional stuff. We talk about publication bias. We use a funnel plot to map publication bias, because what you say is, you know, if this is positive effect and this is negative, so if zero was actually there, there is a bias when you find something that has worked, right? And this might be error margin. If you do something and you find no effect, you tend not to be able to publish it. Right? Said, we did a bunch of stuff, nothing happened. Right? Or we did all this stuff and we thought it would be great, but in fact it made things worse. Right? It's kind of, oh, did you make a mistake in your research, right? It's kind of, we gave these kids more nutrition and yet they got obese and had worse health. Right? Something else must have happened. We must have done the study wrong. You know, so people often will blame themselves or blame methodologies when they have a negative result and not publish that. Whereas when they have a positive result, say, yes, great, we had a positive result, we'll publish that. And so you get publications just on the positive side, which means when you try and do a meta-analysis, you go, right, this is the actual benefit, is positive. Right? But that's because you haven't seen this one and this one and this one, which none of these got published because none of them showed positive results. So if you had all the unpublished data, you'd say, oh, actually, okay, so this is around zero. So no actual benefit because we've got an equal number of studies that show that it's worse and studies that show that it's benefits. But it's harder to find these unpublished ones, where they're saying, oh, there's just no benefit to this. So you get because you carve out, this side of the triangle, you end up only with this side of the triangle. When you average just that side, you get an average positive effect. Okay? And it's one of the challenges of meta-analysis is how you extract that information. Okay. So in here they show a funnel plot, and you want kind of big experience at the top here. There are actually techniques. They then analyze this side of the triangle to try and work out how big this side of the triangle is. Right? So you kind of measure what kind of effects you're getting here. If this looks like a funnel, but looks like a lopsided funnel, right, where they get some big studies out here, but they're not being matched in this space, then you have to downgrade your estimation. Say, well, maybe it's not actually that high. Right? That's not what they did in this paper. They actually looked at them and sort of excluded some things and tried to say, well, okay, a lot of these studies weren't rigorous enough to be included, and they didn't have strong controls, and there's lots of arguments, and they include the argument in there about, you know, in Europe, they tend not to pay people to be participants as much, whereas in the US, you are paying people to participate in research. Does that have an effect on your results when you... it could do, right? It could do. Also, in Magda paper, I think... now, so you're doing the LV? No, Alan. Sorry, Alan. That's it. So in Alan's one, there is this discussion around recommending, right? Would you recommend the game to other people? And it's interesting how they draw a cultural perspective on that, right? Because I think that's, like, whether you'd recommend something is actually, like, the Americans see this as just standard way of asking people, did they like something, is would you recommend it to a friend? But in the cultural context they have there of the elderly, it's kind of, well, actually, no, that's, like, you know, you don't want to force other people into something they don't want to do. So they tend not to recommend things. That's not how their culture works, right? So standardized measures from other cultures, when you come into Europe or Norway or the Netherlands, you get these kind of challenges to the standard way of doing things, right? So I think that's something that I'm interested in having the follow-up on. So when I did my PhD, we were looking at neural network stuff, right? And one of the biggest challenges in any kind of evolution system or neural network system or any of these, whenever someone compares themselves against another algorithm, they don't spend time trying to optimize the other algorithm to make it work great for their problem, right? Because they want to show that their algorithm works great for their problem. So they just do the bog standard static implementation of the other algorithm, and then they spend months tuning theirs, and then say, look, ours is so much better than the standard. And they're like, well, if you spent 6 months tuning the standard one, maybe it would have been even better. that best possible opponent is a significant challenge. Right? So, questions. So when you guys read this paper, so how many actually read the paper? Good, okay. So it wasn't particularly long, right? It was a relatively short paper. They're dense in terminology, right? They talk about a bunch of terms which hopefully you will see again in the future. So, what did you think of the argument that the criticism was incorrect? Yeah, what do you think of their way of defending? Were you convinced by it? So part of the argument is around how you include studies and I've heard some students do the, or some, I've heard the phrase, you know, if you include too many people, you can kind of find, you can kind of prove a lot of stuff, right? And the challenge there is that, to some extent, if you include a large number of things, right, and then you include a big N for your number, you can start getting significance on quite small differences, right? And if you were doing a post hoc analysis where you've already, the research is already done, right? And then we're using that data to try and extract some information out of it, right? Once you're doing that, you're not forming a hypothesis and then testing something. You've got a whole bunch of data and you're trying to throw stuff, like throw analysis at it to try and extract something out of it, right? Generally, that's a great way of finding a research question. Right? Say, the current data suggests this might be true. We should do research to try and confirm that thing. Right? Once you've got a hypothesis, you can then apply it. So XKCD does one on jelly beans. I don't know if you've seen the XKCD. I'll try and find the XKCD jelly bean. XKCD jelly bean. Should be the first link. Significance, yes. So, news. Green jelly beans linked to acne. 95% confidence interval. Okay? And the justification for this is that if you actually look at the cartoon, if this gives me the cartoon, they do the jelly beans called acne. Scientists investigate. We found no link between jelly beans and acne. 95% probability. That settled it. I hear that certain colours causes acne. Scientists. But Minecraft. Okay. So we found no link between purple jelly beans and acne. We found no link between brown jelly beans and acne. No link between pink jelly beans and acne. And link. We found a link between green jelly beans and acne. With a 5% probability. And so that's when you get the news that green jelly beans link to acne. Yes! If you test enough colours, with a 95% probability, you'd expect some of them to be in the bottom 5%, right? Because that's how numbers work. You would then want to take this and do another study on it, right? A repetition of that to actually see if we repeat this, do we get the same result, right? In fact, there's currently like $100 million project to reanalyze a bunch of cancer studies and try and like take those seminal works, try and recreate them to get the same results. And they're kind of mixed. So a lot of studies don't seem to follow up with the, when you do it again, do you get the same result, or were you just lucky that time, right? And meta-analysis is when I say, okay, we've got a whole bunch of people who study a whole bunch of stuff, let's try and collect it all together to find out something. But then you get all the problems with the unpublished stuff, and you get the problem of kind of taking data, analyzing it to extract something, and then saying, well, that's true, without going, okay, this gives us something now that we should study on an independent, clean, new sample to see if it's true. Right? So meta-analysis and this kind of debate back on who should be included, how, like, whether passive or active matters and all those sort of things. As I said, you know, active has a bunch of problems when you pay people or not, changes potentially what's going on. Okay, other questions? Because I want to move on to these two presenting their papers. The Hawthorne effect. Yeah, so I mentioned it when I was talking about serious games, and this paper also talks about the Hawthorne effect, which is the observation effect, right? So when you're observing things, whether that that affects the people who are being observed. Now, you're going to come up and so what you're going to do is that you've got that in your paper. No? Did it? Oh, it was only in this one. Okay, right. Sorry, I thought it was occurred in the elderly one. So the Hawthorne effect is, in this case, the fact that working memory, people are being observed, right? So we know that if you try and improve your memory will improve. Almost regardless of what technique you use, if the fact that you have an intention to improve your memory, and I test you, and then a week later test you again, when you're thinking, oh, I've got to get better at memory, the intent to get better and the fact you're being measured means you improve. Right? So even a passive control group where you don't actually help them get better in their memory, sometimes they'll improve merely by the fact that being observed. Right? So the Hawthorne effect is that observer effect. And that's why they're talking about active and passive, right? Because the passive controls will still experience a Hawthorne effect. Right? Active controls, so passive controls can still get just you can extract that pure measurement effect, right? If you do the full placebo, right, and do kind of make sure everybody gets exactly the same treatment, then if you've made sure that everybody's getting treated the same way, you minimize the chance that it's the fact you're measuring and also the way in which you measure. And you can see this also in weird situations like drug overdoses, right? When you inject heroin, if you don't go through the process of wrapping your arm and filling the syringe and doing all of that before you inject, your body doesn't prepare for it. And so the same amount of heroin that you could take yourself will kill you if someone else gives it to you. Right? So you have to personally prepare your body for that particular activity for it to work. Right? And so in this kind of, your whole body responds to rituals, right? And so this is why we do rituals around going to bed, right? If you're having problems sleeping, you can do rituals around that. Yeah, they set up this whole process by which they get themselves to the point where they are ready to compete, right? If they just tried to do it instantly, bang, they wouldn't. Yeah, it's all part of that mental process to set yourself up in the right space to then be able to form, right? Now, so when you're looking at effect, you've got to understand that these are people, right? So, and certainly for working memory, you're talking about, you know, people's memories, and people's ability to well, in this case, the NBAC procedure. Do you guys know what the NBAC procedure is? NBAC. NBAC, right. Again, what you should do when you get something like that... Good, NBAC, yes. If you Google it, you'll find that there are a bunch of... NBAC, no, that's... That thinks I meant back. No, I meant actually N-BAC. NBAC 2. Yep. Yes, so the Brain Workshop, a dual NBAC procedure. So this is a... So it's showing you this. You can actually find various online... I think Cognitive Fun have one. Cognitive Fun is a website that should give me an NBAC procedure. And memory, NBAC. It was one of the the ones I had been previously looking at. So click for a demonstration. So click and start. Right. Ooh.
Pa. Two.
That was
pa.
Now where do I click to accept?
C.
Left and
two.
Right. Two. Nope. Okay.
Coo.
Coo. Nope.
Key. Coo. T. P. P.
Yeah.
P. C. Coo.
So, really, really badly done, but the idea is that you're given, here you're given a position and an audio, and you've got to decide like whether it's the one that was two back or not, right? So you have one, and then you interrupt it with another one, and then you present. But then if one and three match, and then two and four match, and then three and five match, right? Now, so two back is the standard. You can do more than that. You can try five back, nearly impossible, right? People are really, really bad at doing five back. Most people struggle with two back even. So that's the cognitive test, because it's trying to measure how much working memory you've got and how interruptible it is, right? So that's the test, that one of the tests they were using. It's a fairly standard working memory test. So what you do is you do this test, you try and do a whole bunch of stuff to get your working memory better, and then you do this test again to see if you've got an improvement, right? So here, one of the challenges, and this is what we have with games, is if you turn the in-back procedure into a game and then work on that game, does it improve your working memory, or does it improve your ability to do the test? Potentially a bit of both, right? So, because one of the major challenges is, and this, we have this with exams, right? We're supposed to give you exams, and they're supposed to be a measure of, of your ability. If we teach you how to do the exam rather than improve your ability, does the exam lose its connection to as a good test of ability, and is now just a, did you learn to do that individual test? Right? This is the challenge of search engine optimization, right? If you know how your web page is going to be analyzed, you change your web page to have the best analysis. Does that mean your web page is now the best web page it could be? Probably not, right? You've over-specialized it to fit the algorithm by which you're tested, rather than just make your web page good, right? Which is why Google doesn't tell you when or how it analyzes your page anymore, right? So that they try and avoid people optimizing to an algorithm. So when we have games, if we make games out of our tests can lose validity because they no longer measure what they originally measured. I would like to stop talking now, and I'd like to bring up, so who wants to go first, Alan or Magda? Alan, you come up, and Magda, you can come and sit here as the opponent. So you also have to have read the paper and be prepared to criticize the paper. Not so much criticize Alan, right, because, you know, it's not him that's bad, but you have to find ways of talking about the paper and saying, okay, what are the weaknesses, right? So you're supposed to present the positives. Okay, so do you have a presentation you want to give? Okay, right, okay, so yep, you can jump in, and I will hand this to you.
Thank you. I'm the teacher.
Yep.
I feel empowered.
Everyone hearing your voice now.
Ooh. Yes. Yes. Well, in the following paper, we they test if there are serious games that are like available for seniors, or if they are like user friendly for them. As an introduction, they say that seniors are already motivated to do exercises regularly, and they present a solution, which is called Exer games. Are viewed as an effective mean because this game focuses on physical exercises and players performing movements while they receive in-game feedback. And there's also this name called Oma Ludens, Man the Player. They also mention it in the paper, and it was worth mentioning. The idea of serious games is to integrate games, simulation, and learning and training for the purposes of education, exercise, and health. So in this case, it's very... The serious game is very highly used. And I also put Exer games is a term used for video games that are also a form of exercise. For example, the Wii Fit, the one that I'm going to present here, that's from Xbox Kinect, etc. There's also this term called self-determination theory, or SDT. No, SDD. And it addresses that we as humans have three innate psychological needs: autonomy, competence, and relatedness. When they call autonomy is our how independent we are on the game, how independent we can just adapt to the game. Competence, how well trained we can be for the game, or how prepared we are for doing the specific activity. And relatedness, well, when you can relate it to another activity that you have done in the past or that you would like to do it again. In digital games, players also have to master the game easily and intuitively, because the task offers different challenges and provides feedback for each of the challenges. It depends if it's positive or negative. Autonomy and competence are influenced by these following factors. First, game enjoyment, which is studied in the paper. Second, motivation for future play, or if you recommend this to a particular person, like another gamer. The likelihood of game recommendation, self-efficacy for exercise during using the game, if the game is well calibrated or if it needs to be adjusted, and the game rating. Those are the five things that are evaluated here. The participants are Dutch seniors, 15 exactly, ranging from the ages 55 to 78. Just to be sure, this test is done in the Netherlands, so that's why they choose all of the subjects are Dutch. The mean age was 65.3, meaning that there were just more people around the 60s than around the 70s. Another interesting fact is that four out of the 15 people, 4 worked and 11 were retired. So you could say that out of the 15 people, 4 already did some physical activity in their day-to-day basis. And the conditions were they had to do a test called timed get up and go test, which was composed of the seniors sitting in a place, then getting up, going to a wall, and then coming back and sitting as fast as they could. And their criteria for being accepted into that test is that you have to do it in less than 10 seconds, which most of the people did. And the other condition was that they had to give background detail and personal data, so they could just get more information around. In the results, the interviews revealed that none of the 15 participants experienced pressure while playing the game. So there was a sense of internal autonomy. Everyone was already familiarized or had any no complications during the experiments. This was seen as a positive aspect because it was contributing to achieving a particular goal. So they didn't have to learn how to do the activity and then do it, but rather just go directly to the goal. 6 out of the 15 participants stated that they had felt ample freedom in the choice because of the extensive range of games that they were available. Some of the games were just putting stuff in the, like, showing stuff. Others were doing yoga. Others were doing self-balance, depending on the exercise. But everyone was doing exercises involving that. The study showed also that 14 participants felt satisfied about the way they played the game. That means there's an internal sense of competence and satisfaction amongst them. There was just one participant who was not wholly satisfied, but she indicated that she was improving in the game. In the conclusions, we see that the average rating given by the participants for playing the extra game was 7.7 out of 9, being 9 the highest number and 1 the lowest one, but there was never amongst the range. Two of them who already played extra games before, they motivated their rating, or they rated it a little bit low because they had enjoyed different games in other consoles. So there's still, even in the senior age, you could see console preference. 4 out of 11 participants say that they consider extra games as an attractive way to learn and exercise, such as staying like in the home and train for them. And 3 of these participants moreover commented that it would be fun to play this kind of games with their children. 5 participants commented that they did not yet, at this point, consider extra games to be of value. I mean, they just played the game, they enjoyed it, but they didn't consider it like to do a day-to-day activity. 4 of them indicated that they preferred other type of exercises instead of playing extra games. And some other participants, they were just kind of didn't feel so comfortable because there was this game that they had just to walk around the city, and they felt that the game could be more interesting if they were adapted to the Dutch culture. Like, if instead of walking to some random place, they could walk either to in Amsterdam or any other city in Netherlands. So you could already see that there's some specific traits that say that they prefer their national things. Another reason was that some people didn't value the game that much was that they prefer to do other activities like walking, playing tennis, or just going biking, etc., because they consider those options more attractive. In the discussion, we see that large scale, that there's still some follow-up needed to be done to determine the trends to describe what is significant or not in the study. I mean, that in this case, they interviewed Dutch people, so they were only adapted to the Dutch culture, and they wanted to merge with it. I mean, they wanted the games to be specifically for them, but these games are kind of broad, so they don't give those specific situations. Seniors would like to play extra games with their family members. That's also something that could be noted, including grandchildren, because they feel that it's more enjoyable. So this is also something to take into consideration. And finally, the results reveal that seniors are motivated to play extra games when the games, environments, or games themselves summon up memories. So in this case, like I said before, that walking around a particular city, they would like to walk around a city that they know so they could just remember like what it is to be outside and walk. Thank you. Thank you. it's if there's any enjoyment amongst the playing extra games. What's the they try to prove what's the value for elderly in playing extra games, exercise games. In this case, just a particular example of the game in Xbox 360. That's why they stated in the beginning, and then they just develop it in the examples. Sort of. They try to get into the background that they are Dutch and they don't like the game because it's not adjustable to their needs, and yeah, they try to give different explanations. But in essence, what they're trying to state here is that extra games are a viable option for the elderly. Go out for the for once. Yeah, they're not trying to measure like how good elderly are in the games, but rather if they prefer to do those games or not. Exactly, specifically extra games. Yeah, they did it because there was a previous study made with the same type of game, extra games, but they did it to college students. So, yeah, it was a little bit ambiguous, but I think that was the only study they had specifically to compare with the extra games. So they tried to mention it as worth comparing in some way. That's actually a good recommendation. They should narrow it a little bit more, like plus 60 or plus 65. 70 plus, exactly. they had such a... It's more practical. Yes, it's more practical. No, they need a decent sample size. Most of them are highly educated, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, only few people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Only. Around. Mm-hmm. And actually, in the discussion, they want to increase the number of educated people. That's so they already have 80%, and they want to they want to have 100%. The value of the game. I prefer walking, no. That's true. Some might even feel excited, like, hey, I'm going to participate. I remember that one. That used to be fun. Yes. Big range. Wasn't feasible, wasn't yeah. Yes. Web, that's web 1.0 with versus web 3.0. It's like it's too broad. Yeah, you can actually say like he said, one could be the mother, the other could be the grandmother. So it's.
on you. So you can be there too. So. Okay, where does the mic?
Oh, okay. Is it working like that? Oh, no.
Yes, that's correct. The study good. Okay. yeah, do you hear me? okay, so the study investigated 77 participants. They spent 8 hours, about half of them on playing the Portal 2 and the half of them playing the Lumosity, to check if the games are have influence to improve the problem solving, spatial skills and persistence. Yeah, they started with that playing a game is becoming more popular these days, and also that there's a lot of research that that it can improve several competencies, such as visual spatial skills and attention, openness to experience, college grades, persistence, and civic engagement. Digital games can also motivate students to learn valuable academic content and skills. Yeah, so like the background is quite nice, but they tried to check it. They took Portal 2 to check if normal games, and not only dedicated for the brain training improvement in general skills, that they can also improve the skills like the problem solving and spatial skills. They took the Lumosity to have the comparison between the normal game to check the results from the normal game and the game which is dedicated to improve your skills. So yes, that is it. I don't know if you know the Portal 2, but it's the game. Yeah, but I knew a very, very good Lumosity. Yes, so yeah, the Portal 2 is like the first-person puzzle platform video game, which makes you use some tools, and actually it gives you opportunity to check your spatial skills, because you need to use the portal to to portal yourself, whatever. It's funny, but the Lumosity has I'm not sure how many games. Oh, there's 55 games, but they are dedicated to train your memory, to train attention, mental flexibility, and problem solving. I don't know if you have played Lumosity before. I played actually a lot, but I'm not sure if this. No, I previously played a lot actually before. Yeah, I've heard about it, and I was I'm not sure if I made any improvement, but we'll see how the results look like. Oh. Okay, so the researchers they focused on problem solving skills, and they said that the problem solving consists of four relatively independent skills. One is rule application, solving problem by applying existing rules. Problem decomposition, determining the goals, sub-goals, and individual steps of the problem. Flexibility, using tools in novel ways, and resource management, effective and efficient allocation of resources. But they only, for purposes of the study, they only checked the rule application and flexibility. Yes, and they have the. They claim that, as this is written here, some possible outcomes of playing Portal 2 may be the enhancement of rule application skills, and the reduction in the functional fixedness, the enhancement of cognitive flexibility as measured by inside problems. For example, Portal 2 provides a unique game. Okay. provides a unique gameplay environment that can promote cognitive flexibility through multiple contextualized insight problems that require players to creatively apply newly learned rules and or tools. Yes. So that was for the problem solving, and they also checked the spatial skills, which consists of figural, vista, and environmental spatial skills. They said also that Portal 2 has the potential to improve spatial skills due to its unique 3D environment that requires players to navigate through problems in sophisticated ways. Over the past 20 years, growing body of research has shown that playing action video games can improve performance on tests of spatial cognition and selective attention. Well. And they also checked the persistence, and they said this is a facet of continuousness that reflects a dispositional need to complete difficult tasks, and the desire to exhibit high standards of performance in the face of frustration. They created hypotheses because they will check the problem-solving skills, the spatial skills, and the persistence. But they create the four hypotheses they will check, And this is the portal tool outcome scores for problem solving, spatial skills and persistence will be comparable or greater than the Lumosity Lumosity outcomes on the same constructs and on specific measures. The second hypothesis is players in both the portal tool and Lumosity conditions will show improved pretest to post-test gains relative to both facets of problems, solving skills, rule application, and cognitive flexibility. The third is players in Portal 2 will improve all three facets of spatial skills, figural, vista, environmental, while players in Lumos 2 will only improve their figural and vista skills. And the fourth is like in-game performance measures in Portal 2 and Lumos City will predict post-test scores in problem solving and spatial skills after controlling for pretest scores. So the method, they took 77 people aged 18 to 22, 43% of male and 57% of female. Yeah, it's high. yes, and they were randomly assigned to the conditions, so 42 to Portal 2 and 35 to Lumosity. And they gave them $100 gift card. It was... yes, to motivate them. Good. Okay, they... the instruments, before and after 8 hours of gameplay, they made the pretest and post-test. No, before it was pretest and after the it was the post-test. So they reserve about 60 minutes to complete each test. So basically, people spent about 10 hours doing this. Okay. So to measure the problem solvings, they used Raven's progressive matrices. This is something like the intelligence test, and they used insights test. There is like this is the difficult questions. There is the example. Consider the following question: Martian Maria. Let's say, I don't know how to read it. We're born on the same day, of the same month, of the same year, to the same mother and the same father, yet they are not twins. How this is possible? Yeah, so the answer is that they are triple, and the question requires the problem solvers to think beyond the immediate context. They also used the remote association test. It was Yeah, the other test is like to measure the creative thought, and you have like the three words, and you need to create the connections between them and create like the idea how to connect it, and it's. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, and for the spatial skills, they also used like the mental rotation test and spatial orientation test, and they created the game Virtual Spatial Navigation Assessment. They created by their own in the Unity. It was the game, like the 3D game to collect the gems. And it was difficult to find it, and yeah, it was like to find it somewhere in the 3D 3D area. Yeah, the I mean the yes, the in general. Okay, the persistence they create the picture comparison, and to get the results, they also use the survey. Okay, so okay, they also it was very important because Lumosity and Portal 2 also had some in-game measures, because Lumosity has also some game points, and they also tried to investigate if this as it was the fourth hypothesis. To investigate if this curse will show any influence to the post-test results. Yeah. So here are the results. I don't know if I should quickly go through it, or this is not important now. Okay. Yes. Okay, so for the hypothesis one, which was again Portal 2 outcome scores for problem solving, spatial skills, and persistence will be comparable to or greater than the Lumosity outcomes on the same construct and on specific measures. Yes, so they found out that there was a significant effect for the problem solving construct, with an advantage of Portal 2 over Lumosity. They created the ANCOVA models. There was also a significant difference between conditions on the spatial skills construct, again in Portal 2's favor, and differences between conditions in relation to persistence, time spent on impossible tasks, holding the self-report persistence score constant, was significant. With Portal 2 participants showing more persistence after gameplay compared to Lumosity participants. So these general findings justified additional ANCOVA models for the individual tests comparison problem solving and spatial skills. So generally the first hypothesis was yeah, they said that Portal 2 is similar or greater than Lumosity. Like the results for the Portal 2 and Lumosity was comparable. Okay, I went too much down. Okay, they also said that for the problem solving test, ANCOVA results show that the Portal 2 inside post test was higher than the Lumosity post-test, and then ANCOVA results for the spatial tests showed that Portal 2, the MRT post-test scores were greater than the Lumosity. Yes, and because this was for the spatial skills, and the SOT post-test mean was not significantly different between the two conditions. Okay, so the hypothesis two. So the players in both the Portal 2 and Lumosity conditions will show improved pre-test to post-test gains relative to both facets of problem-solving skills, rule application, and cognitive flexibility. So they found out they found no significant gains for the Portal 2 conditions from pretest to posttest for any specific problem solving measures, and they didn't found they didn't find any significant pretest to posttest gains for the Lumosity as well. So yeah, they actually didn't found any good results for the comparing pretest to posttest results in both games. There's something written. Sorry? Where? I don't know. Yes. Yes. Yes, so the hypothesis to found out, they found out that there is no significant correlation and no significant improvement actually between the pitches and post test. About the third hypothesis is players in Portal 2 will improve all three facets of spatial skills, figural, vista, and environmental, while players in Lumosity will only improve their figural and vista skills. And they found out that Portal 2 conditions showed pretest to post-test improvement on the MRT, and yeah, so also the environmental test scores significantly differs from pretest to post-test, and for the participants in the Lumosity conditions there were no significant pretest to post-test improvement of any of the three spatial tests. And the last hypothesis is like to if the in-game measures in Portal 2 and Lumosity will predict post-test scores in the problem solving and spatial skills. And they found out that the performance in Portal 2 and Lumosity predicts outcomes on various measures beyond the predicted by their respective pretest scores. Okay, so the discussion. The results of the study suggests that playing Portal 2 can have a noticeable impact on a certain important cognitive skills relative to a control group that explicitly claims to improve cognitive skills. Portal 2 makes no such claim, and using Lumosity as the control condition was a conservative decision, and hence the findings showing a Portal 2 advantage are consequently more powerful than using either a no treatment control or a casual game. Regarding hypothesis one, we found significant differences between conditions for all three of our primary constructs, problem solving, spatial skills, and persistence, all showing an advantage for Portal 2 over Lumosity. When examining differences in individual test level, we saw significant differences with a portal to advantage for the inside test. All the spatial tests. So regarding hypothesis 2, there is no evidence that playing either portal to or Lumosity improves specific problem-solving skills as reflected in external pre-test, post-test gains per test. For hypothesis 3, we found partial support that playing Portal 2 improved subjects' performance on small and large scale spatial tasks. And there was no improvement in Lumosity on any of the three spatial tests. So the findings give strong evidence that playing Portal 2 causes improvement in small and large scale spatial skills. Moreover, the fact that we used a conservative control group gives even greater credence to the finding that playing Portal 2 can improve spatial skills over the other activities that claim to improve spatial conditions. While video gameplay has been shown before to improve MRTI performance, no one to our knowledge has provided experimental evidence that video game play can improve performance in large-scale spatial skills. Our findings suggest that video game use can improve one's ability to encode, store, retrieve, and apply environmental spatial information, which could potentially transfer to actual real world navigation. These findings might be informative for professors that require large-scale spatial skills. And the persistence measures obtained after gameplay was greater for the participants in the Portal 2 conditions than for the Lumosity conditions. Regarding the hypothesis 4, the results suggest that increased performance in games can yield improvement of cognitive skills. Future research should focus on performance indicators within game to see how they can mediate the effect of training manipulation on cognitive skills. They highlighted that the sample is not so big and the when generalizing it should be everyone should be little there should be caution with generalizing. The future research suggests to have larger sample, different population, and more items per test. I'm not sure, but I would suggest that probably because this is very popular game. And I think that it is it seems like it can improve your skills for sure, the spatial skills. So maybe that's why, or maybe they have some sponsor. I don't know. Hard to say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe because when you are a gamer, then you, when you play a lot, you can have the your skills improved so much, and maybe the or the Lumosity or the Portal 2 may not be so interesting for you and won't give you any advantage. So I think so, and they wanted to have the objective, not biased results, and. Yeah, as for example, when it was your article and it was academic background seniors, I would suggest that they should take not academic background seniors to not bias the results. I don't know. I'm not sure if they wrote it. Should I cancel? Yeah. Okay, but I wanted to raise something because when I was just reading it and I was preparing, I found out something interesting that actually because they made a lot of results that they said that Portal 2 and Lumosity is like the Portal 2 that is not something worse than Lumosity, which is dedicated only for the it's dedicated for the brain training, but when you look at the results table, it's later. Actually, you can see that each pre and post test is actually each post test is decreasing. Not all of them, but. Yeah, I found out that it is like they said that Portal 2 is not so they won't give any this is not like the Portal 2 is better or the same like Lumosity, but the Lumosity isn't so good actually. In Lumosity you can see that each post test is even worse. So like they said that Portal 2 is on the same level as Lumosity, but Lumosity isn't so good to give you any improvement in brain training. I think so. And they didn't write anything about it, but because they only compared the Portal to Lumosity, and they took like the Lumosity as a as this is true, that this is giving you good results, but it's not covered by the results. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was. Yeah. GP. Yeah, they didn't comment anything of it, but